Hey everybody, Max Boltman here again alongside Corey Pronman for another Friday prospect edition of the Athletic Hockey Show. The 2021 NHL draft has finally come and gone, and it was one of the wilder days, full action-wise, in the NHL in quite some time when you factor in all the trades that happened beforehand. We're going to recap that today. We're also going to break down what we have seen at the World Junior Summer Showcase happening right now in Plymouth and start looking ahead to the next draft class. It's also the first episode we've actually been able to do live in person together. So first of all, Corey, why don't you rate my dining room setup?
It's about average to above average.
I appreciate that you're still sticking to the scouting scale there.
Yes.
No, that's all good. We're excited here. I mean, it's been fun times here. Corey has barely slept, so we're going to get him to say a whole bunch of wild stuff today. If all goes well, and we'll start that out on the 2021 draft class, Corey, what surprised you?
The draft was interesting because obviously this was a unique draft class in terms of how much live viewings there were, how many of the international events and major showcase events were canceled. We had no OHL season whatsoever. And I think the common thought going into the draft was, there's all this uncertainty surrounding this draft. Things are going to get really crazy. But frankly, when you kind of go through the first round, the second round, even into the third round, I didn't see a whole lot of crazy in there, to be quite honest. Not to say that there weren't some picks that were interesting or sparked debate, but no more than I thought than a typical draft class where that happens every year. I thought the first two rounds, actually, most of the names we thought would go there went there. Now, there are a couple that were interesting. The first one would have been Ottawa's pick at 10th overall, Tyler Boucher, right, from the NTDP. So Boucher is an interesting one because he didn't play much this season. And not due to COVID reasons, he was injured several times. I remember getting like a couple of text messages from scouts in the beginning of the season. We didn't know when the NTDP season was going to start, but when it did start, right, they went to go play some NAHL teams. I think there were some Division III college teams thrown in there. And you started hearing from teams like, oh, you know, this Tyler Boucher guy is looking really good. Like, he's this, you know, this big, strong, crushing power forward. He's showing a little bit of offense. You're like, oh, that's intriguing. And then a couple weeks into the season, he gets injured. He misses like a month or two afterwards. And then I come back. I went to go watch the NTDP play live at Adrian College. I want to say it was either in December or January. It was Boucher's first game back from his first injury. First shift of the game, he comes out, absolutely crushes a guy. You're like, oh yeah, that's what I've been hearing so much about. Like, here's this big power forward. Second shift of the game, he goes out and tries to hit a guy hard again too. Their legs get tied up. He has to crawl off the ice. He's in crutches the next day. And that's kind of a lot of how his season went. And then he came back from that second injury, and I didn't think he was quite as good as in those first few weeks. And that's kind of the profile you have on him, as well as what you had from him in his underage season. And I do like Boucher. I think on top of the elite physicality, I think he's got pretty good puck skills. Skating is where I wonder with him for the NHL. I could buy NHL average. My projection is slightly below NHL average. That's kind of, you know, I respect what Ottawa's trying to do there. I didn't see personally enough attributes to get him into that spot of the draft, even though I think he is a unique player who does, who the way he plays is not easy to find in an NHL draft. I do like Tyler. I just don't know. I felt this was them shooting for their Tom Wilson, their prime Milan Lucic, and I just don't know if realistically you expect. I think Boucher will be a full-time NHL player. I could see third line wing. I think in the absolute best case, I could see second line wing, but I don't know if you're going to get the big offense from him.
Yeah, he's interesting because he did only play, what, I think it was 12 to 14 games this whole year. I think he's about a point per game player over that span at the program.
Which is good. Yeah, but not amazing, but good.
Yeah. And so if you think back in especially the team that drafted him, Ottawa, they go and they pick Brady Tkachuk. And we're not necessarily seeing a Brady Tkachuk ceiling here.
Right. Yeah, Brady was a much better offensive player in the NTDP as an underage there.
Yeah, he was BU in his draft year already.
Yeah, BU in his draft year, went to the World Juniors, one of the best players there. Completely different kind of profile. But I do like Boucher. I think he could be on this year's World Junior team. I think he could be, you know, useful to a good NHL player. But I just, like, Brady has, on top of the elite physicality, he has great hockey sense. He has great skill. You watch him with Ottawa. He makes all kinds of plays. And I just don't know if Boucher does that. So that's where my concern is, that I feel like if you wanted a hard element in a forward, he may not play exactly the way Boucher does, but I thought Cole Sillinger would have made the most sense. Maybe even Brandon Hoffman to an extent, but definitely Cole Sillinger would have made a lot of sense. So that one was a surprise to me for sure.
I mean, we've been watching Boucher at the showcase here this week, and we'll get into more of this later. I've seen him make a couple of nice passes, but one of the questions you mentioned, that, you know, are they going for their Tom Wilson here? He's a very physical player. He's also 6'1".
Yeah.
Like, can you beat Tom Wilson in the NHL at 6'1"?
Right. And Tom Wilson came up through junior hockey.
Right.
You know, Boucher's going to come up through college hockey.
Can't fight. Right.
Yeah. And so it'll be interesting. Like I said, I respect a lot of what he brings. I think he's a unique player. I just, the upper half of the lineup type of guy, the guy who plays, you know, provides a really large impact for an NHL team. I like him. I just don't know if that's a realistic projection. But like I said, I do think he could be, he could help Ottawa. I just don't know if he'll be the 10th best player in the draft.
How good does he have to be? Not to the point that he'll be the 10th best player in the draft, but to the point that 5 years from now, Senators fans look back on that and they go, that's fine.
If he became like a true, like, second line winger,
40 to 45 point.
Yeah. Let's say like a 2020 guy. Yeah. Like, and I think that's the really the best case scenario, to be quite honest, just my opinion. But I think that's one where maybe they felt that was a piece of the puzzle they were missing, and you plug him into with Stützle and Tkachuk and Sanderson and Josh Norris and Alex Formanton
and Batherson
and Eric Brännström and all those guys. And then I think you can swallow a little bit more, but that obviously depends on what happens after them. You know, if Cole Sillinger becomes a first line forward, a Sebastian Koser, Jesper Wallstedt become, you know, true, you know, great NHL goaltenders, that will sting a little bit more. But to be fair, once those top nine skaters were off the board, the consensus varied wildly. That's why for months we were talking about Ottawa pick being rather pivotal, because we really didn't know where the draft was going to go after nine.
Well, part of that pivot had to do with the two goalies. And
yeah,
we thought if Ottawa doesn't take one, there's a good chance at least one of them starts to fall down the board a little bit. As it turned out, both of them start to fall down the board.
Part of that is because Chicago also...
Yes, they traded out. That's right. So they trade out to Columbus with we'll talk about Columbus's draft. Actually, let's just do that right now. Getting to Columbus, they trade Seth Jones in the hours leading up to the draft. They get a haul in return, and that haul includes swapping the Tampa Bay 32nd pick, which they already owned, dating back to the David Savard trade, up to 12. That puts them in position after Ottawa passes on Sillinger, and after they had picked on Kent Johnson earlier, or picked Kent Johnson earlier in the draft. They come out of that top 12 with two really top six forwards there in Johnson and Sillinger.
Right. Depending who you talk to, they both could be top six centers. Like I said, some scouts may think Johnson might be a center or not. Some scouts might think Sillinger's a center or not. But right now, they're both centers, or at least listed as centers. And I'm sure Columbus will do their very best to at least try to see if they would work in the NHL.
Yep.
As centers. Now, like I said, Kent Johnson is ahead of Cole Sillinger. Not surprisingly, he went ahead. And just for me, he's a notably better player. But now that was a huge part of their depth chart that had a hole. And now it'll take some couple of years, but you can now start to envision a future where Kent Johnson is your first line center.
Yeah.
and Cole Sellinger is your second line center. And will those two be able to fill that role on a contending caliber team? You know, time will tell. Maybe not. But they're really promising prospects, and that was a huge organizational need that Columbus had going into the draft that was addressed. And they also had a need on defense after trading Seth Jones. And even before trading Seth Jones, they didn't really have many young defensemen in their system. And I think Corson Kuhlman's, the Wisconsin commit, has a lot of NHL assets and didn't really play much this season in the AJ. He'll probably be a 2-3 year college guy. But he's also, I think, you know, that getting those three players adds a lot of talent to a farm system that frankly didn't really have much talent coming into the weekend. And that doesn't mean their rebuild is over. There's a lot more work to do there in Columbus. You know, who knows what's going to happen, say, with Zach Werenski in the next couple of years, for example. But this weekend, that's past weekend, mind you, was a really important step forward for that organization that's been taking its lumps in recent years.
Well, you know, adding in Corson Kuhlman, like, that's another, you know, he's not replacing Seth Jones, who they traded away, but he is a player who, on upside alone, like, you got a chance to really get a player there in terms of a big mobile defenseman who at some levels shows kind of offensive inclinations and at other levels looks like a solid defensive-minded player. You have the package for a complete defenseman there that they get at 25. I don't know where Sillinger factored into that top 10 on pure upside that you did on our last episode. I don't think he did.
He didn't, no.
But he wouldn't have been too far outside of it.
No, he wouldn't. And Kuhlman's is definitely in the 20s, like, I definitely can understand why some teams would have been hesitant to do in the teens, but in the 20s, it made a lot of sense. And I think those three players, and some of their day two guys I like too, but those three players that was an exciting combination to get.
Really quick, you mentioned the possibility of Johnson and Sillinger as both centers in the top six. I also like them as complementary players, potentially, in terms of if you wanted to play them on one line, maybe Sillinger in the middle and Johnson on the wing. You know, Sillinger can kind of be that retrieval guy and go into the corners and do some of those things that maybe you don't see Johnson do as much.
Sure.
He's a shooter. Johnson can be a playmaker for him. I like the complementary fit of those two potentially too.
Right. But just looking at their organizational depth chart right now, I would imagine they would rather just have Sillinger plug that 2C hole in 5 years from now. You know, just looking at the young players, like Liam Foudy, Kirill Marchenko, their wingers. I do like Voronkov a lot. He's a guy who was a mid-round pick, played for a Russia's World Championship team. He's a guy I can envision as a third-line center in the National Hockey League. Second line might be a little bit on the high side, but he's a promising player for them. And except it's starting to see a little bit of it coming together in terms of how their organization could look good again in a couple of years, but there's still a lot more work left there to be done, I think.
Yeah. All right, we teased the goalies. Now let's get back into that now. By the 14th pick, both of them were still on the board where Buffalo took Isaac Rosen. That put Dallas on the clock at 15, and Detroit ultimately is the team that trades up. They give up 23, a second rounder, and a fifth rounder to go up, and they take Sebastian Kosa. You had thought there was a pretty good chance coming into the draft that Kosa could be the first goalie picked, and that's where Detroit went. They took the swing on the WHL kid with an unbelievable statistical season this past year and more size, maybe a little bit more athleticism. Is this the higher upside pick ultimately with the goalie that Detroit made?
Yeah, I mean, I never thought there was a separation between the two of them. I had Kosa rated personally ahead of Wallstedt, but I thought it was always a bit of a 50-50 call, depending on what you valued in terms of the pure tools, the track record. If you valued hockey sense more, you could have gone in either way with them. But I think if you want to ask me, you know, who has the most pure, like, talent between the two of them, it would be Kosa, just because it's, as we've discussed before, it's so easy to look at the 6'6 goaltender who moves in the net the way he does and envision a future where he is an upper echelon goaltender in the National Hockey League. Doesn't mean he will. Just like a lot of the guys in this draft, you know, Kosa hasn't really played a full season in quite some time. He's played parts of seasons. He got almost every start for the Oil Kings this season, but it was, you know, a very abbreviated WHL season. So I think there's still some questions to be answered. How is he going to do over a full WHL season? He'll probably be Canada's starting goaltender at the World Juniors. How does he do there? And then obviously when he turns pro. But like I said, I can understand why some may not be 100% sold on him, but I just think there's just so much talent there that, you know, I respect the bet. I respect why Detroit did it. And you know, not only to address a clear organizational need, but once you got to that point in the draft around the 15th slot, I didn't think there was another better pure athlete on the board there than Kosa. So I understand why they felt the need to get aggressive, even if it's for a position and goaltender that has some risk.
Yeah, I mean, when you move into the second goalie then next with Wallstedt, we thought 20 kind of seemed like a true floor in this draft for goalies, and we thought that because Edmonton was picking there. Ultimately, 20 is where Wallstedt goes, but it happens because Minnesota trades up to Edmonton's spot to pick Jesper Wallstedt.
Yeah, and Minnesota is an organization, as we mentioned on the last episode of the podcast, they're an organization we've talked about for the last 3 years in terms of trading a goalie. You know, they were an organization that was speculated with Spencer Knight. They were an organization that was speculated with Yaroslav Askarov. And then this year, despite, you know, it seeming really unlikely they would end up with a goaltender, they do end up with one of the two premium goalie prospects in Jesper Wallstedt, because like Detroit, they get aggressive. And I think going into this draft, that was kind of the thought, that given just how big a separation there was between Wallstedt and Kosa, the next best goalie, I think the next goalie was Ben Gaudreau, went in the third round, I believe. That if you really wanted one of these, you were going to have to, make a move to go get one, because there wasn't the next obvious guy to add to your farm system in this class. And so I respect why Minnesota did that. And there, we'll see what happens to the organization over the next 5 years. They're kind of stuck in a little bit of a middle area where you're not sure if are they a rebuilding team or are they a contending team. But it looks, at least in terms of their young players, you now have a decent group of forwards, a decent group of defensemen, and now a goaltender of the future, where you could kind of see some promise coming out of this farm system right now.
For what it took to get up to 20, or I guess what it took for Edmonton to move back to 22, were you surprised that they didn't just grab Wallstedt? Like, they get a third round pick out of this. Like, are you surprised they didn't just take him themselves?
And this is the reason why Wallstedt, who I think a lot of people expected to go top 10, top 12, there's the reason why he went there in 20 is that was one of the ones in the days and the weeks leading to the draft, you started hearing from teams getting cold feet about this guy. They didn't like how his season ended. We've talked before about how one guy had the amazing first half, one guy had the amazing second half in Kosa in the latter example. Teams were scared off by how his season ended. Reports came out, that his fitness wasn't great. He was up at like 215, 220 pounds. And given that he's not, the most quick athlete already, because his game is pure fundamentals in hockey sense, I think that scared teams off a little bit. But and you probably could find some teams that had him top 15, top 12 on their board at all. It only takes one. I'm not meaning to say that there weren't a lot of scouts who absolutely loved this player, because there were. But that didn't shock me that a team like, say, Edmonton didn't want to do it, because I think there were plenty of organizations going into the draft that had just concluded they just didn't want to go down that path with Wallstedt.
Yeah. We talked about one of the surprise picks earlier on with Tyler Boucher. Earlier in the second, Riker Evans from Seattle, another one. Not a player I was particularly familiar with. What should I know about Riker Evans? More importantly, what should the people of Seattle know about Riker Evans?
Evans was a second-year eligible prospect in late 2001 who was the best defenseman in his WHL division in their abbreviated season with Regina. He was a guy who, personally, when I watched, I wasn't enamored. I saw a 5'11 defenseman with good hockey sense. He was competitive. I just thought he was kind of vanilla. He was a point of game this year, but I didn't really see standout speed and skill when I watched him personally. But he's another guy, when I started making calls after the draft was over, some scouts agreed with me. They didn't really buy him, but I talked to some. There were definitely more than one team, obviously including Seattle, but other teams as well that I would talk to would be like, no, like, this guy is an elite skater. We thought he was one of the highest rated skaters in the draft, and that was a differentiator for him. The skating's really popped over the last couple of years with him, and that makes him an exciting prospect. Time will tell. He's a late 01. Chances are he's going to sign rather soon. He might play in the American League right away for Seattle. So maybe they have something there, maybe they don't, but we'll probably find out, quicker than other prospects, given that he'll probably play pro right away. And we'll get to see, kind of get a gauge of, how close does he look to being an NHL caliber player. But yeah, that was one more interesting one. Like Josh Doan's re-entry in the top 40, that didn't surprise me. He's a guy we've heard a lot about coming to the draft. One of the best players in the USHL this season. Whether you agree with it or not, it's up for reasonable debate, but that one didn't surprise me. The Evans one, I had watched him this season. I just didn't see that one coming, but that's part of the fun of the draft.
And then the most surprising moment of probably the entire draft weekend comes right at the end of night one. That's when Montreal selects Logan Mailloux. He actually had asked a few days before the draft that no one draft him. So I didn't even realize at the time that they call his name that this was an eligible pick. Obviously, Mailloux was convicted in a Swedish court for taking a photo of a woman performing a sex act without her consent and circulating it among some teammates. And so just to hear his name called at the end of the first round was surprising to me. Was it surprising to the NHL community as a whole?
I don't really think anybody really knew what was going to happen. You had heard like rumors that teams were still looking at it despite the facts that you just pointed out. Because unlike, say, the MLB draft or the NFL draft, you can't declare for the NHL draft and you can't undeclare for the NHL draft. The CBA does not kind of have those stipulations. All the eligibility is based purely on age. So I didn't know, honestly, going in what was going to happen. It was really uncertain. You know, we had to be prepared for the instance that he was and that he wasn't, because it was such a unique situation. And you know, we're not going to go too much into the facts of what happened with him in Sweden. We, you know, Katie and I have reported it, and you all can go read it and arrive at your own opinions. He wasn't on my draft list just because you know that was my opinion that if I was running a team, I probably wouldn't have done it. But he is an NHL prospect now, and we'll treat him as an NHL prospect now going forward. And just frankly, from when I watched him the previous season and this season, I didn't really see a player that I thought was worth the first round investment. He's played one OHL game his entire life. Other than that, he played in like a Junior B League in Ontario. He played a Hockey Enten, a third division pro league in Sweden. And he's an intriguing athlete. He's 6'3", 6'4", whatever he is. Right shot D with really good hands. He's a big shot. He's physical. Thought the skating was a bit of an issue personally when I watched him. The question is going to be whether he has enough, you know, pure playmaking ability and offense to translate to higher levels, which you don't know. He's only played one OHL game. He played like 5-6 minutes in that game and for London 2 seasons ago. He's definitely a pro prospect, but aside what happened with him in Sweden, I wouldn't have probably been inclined to make that bet. But time will tell on a variety of things with this case. Because you know, the hockey side aside, obviously it's a case that has resonated with the public in a really unique way.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, let's get into now the World Junior Summer Showcase. It started the day of the second day of the draft in Plymouth with Sweden and Finland's teams there. It's stretched into this week. That's why you are in Detroit here this week. What has stood out to you so far? Where I think we're 3 game days in, really, that you've been here for?
Yeah, I mean, this camp is a little different because typically Canada would come in for the second half of this tournament, which they won't. They're having a joint camp with their U18 team in Alberta right now. And we would usually have USA make cuts around now, which they're not going to do, to maintain four competitive teams in this tournament. So you're really just getting a deeper understanding of USA's player pool here. Some guys that probably would have been cut today, you're now going to see a couple more games of. And the disappointing thing is for Sweden is 3 of their top prospects, William Eklund, Simon Edvinson, and Jesper Wallstedt, all didn't participate in this camp. It would have been nice to see them. I'm sure for Detroit fans, they would particularly have liked to have seen Edvinson come to this thing. But Finland has most of their top group, so it's been interesting to see how some of those guys have fared. And for some of the USA players, the USHL players particularly. It's been interesting to see how they've been able to perform at this level, or even like a guy who's played high school most of the season, and a guy like Scott Morrow, who's been able to step in and I think been surprisingly good, considering I thought real expectations would have to have been rather modest for him, given that he hasn't really played much high-level hockey before.
To me, that some of the guys that have stood out so far on the American team, a couple of the kids that Maki Samuskevich was drafted to Florida late in the first round. You have on the Finnish team Atu Ratu, who at one point was a really high pick projected in this draft. He ends up going at number 52. Anybody from this draft class in particular who's really popped?
Yeah, I think Ratu would be one of the obvious ones there that you would have to say, you know. I don't think he's like surprised me in terms of how he's played, but his draft season was just so bad, and it wasn't just the games that you watched in Liga. You're like, oh, he's not getting it done right now versus men. You go to watch his junior games too from this season, and just looked rather ordinary at that level. Good, but you weren't just blown away by this guy. Like, oh, he's a no doubt like first round pick or something along those lines. He teased you with flashes, but overall, it wasn't a really inspiring season. So it's just a really interesting development to see him come here and be the guy that you saw 2-3 years ago. Skating still doesn't look great, and that was a primary concern among NHL teams. But he is showing his skill, he is showing his playmaking and his scoring ability, and he is showing a strong compete level. Where I think when you're watching Ratu right now, it inspires some confidence at the very least that there is more to this player than what we watched last season. Doesn't mean he's all the way back. Doesn't mean all the concerns are gone. You know, we need to see how he's going to do in Liga next season as well and see if he really can bring his stock back. But this has definitely been an inspiring week from him. Like I said, I mentioned Scott Morrow before. Defense still isn't the best, but when you have a 6'2 defenseman who can skate, has this kind of skill, he's making plays, and that's a very interesting player and a guy who's looked rather exciting here. I've liked Matt Nyes too. I think he's done well here.
Toronto pick,
yes, yep. Second round pick. This is his second time at this camp. He was here last year too, and hasn't blown you away, but he's. You know, he's been really involved in the offense. He's scoring. He's competing well. I would say that's been a strong point from at least and from the guys from this draft. Those are like the immediate ones that would come to my mind. Other guys are showing you flashes, like Lucius Coronado have had flashes. Bros has had flashes. I wouldn't say all of them have been consistently good in terms of being like, true standout players. Tyler Boucher has had some flashes too. This camp is usually a camp for the older players, and so it's no surprise that you watch a guy like Thomas Bortolo, who was excellent in college this season, and a guy like Jake Sanderson, who was part of the gold medal winning team the previous year, be among the top players at this camp. They were expected to, and they've delivered. You know, they've probably been arguably. It's been between Ratu and Bortolo for the best forward here, and I would say Sanderson's been clearly the best defenseman here.
Yeah, I would agree with that, especially on the Sanderson port. I think he's been the best player for me through the tournament so far, although I agree Bortolo has been very good, and Ratu certainly, I think, has looked very impactful. What I always struggle with when watching, especially the younger players at this camp, is we're used to watching these guys, especially in their draft year. For most of them, some of them have played pro, especially the Europeans, but they've been at a level where they can really dominate. And it can be hard to assess immediately, like, okay, this team, Tyler Boucher, for example, team that took him 10th overall, what should a reasonable expectation be for the kind of impact he makes at this U20 showcase level?
If you're a 10th overall pick, and you know, let's presume Tyler Boucher is the 10th best player in the draft. If you're the 10th best player in the draft at this kind of camp, you're not expected to be the best player, but you're expected to look like you belong. You're helping your team on a rather consistent basis. You may not be standing out every single night because you know, Boucher will have another year to do that. He'll be back the season after that. But guys who go in that range are expected to basically be helpful players, good players on a consistent basis. If you're a true high echelon prospect, that is. Like, you look at like Luke Hughes here, and he hasn't been the best player every night. He's made some mistakes on the ice, but you notice him. Like,
yeah.
You know, with his skating and his skill, like he jumps out at you. And I think that's a realistic expectation for a high pick.
Another thing that we are getting a little bit of a look at this summer showcase is a couple of the players who we think could factor in pretty high a year from now in the NHL draft. And, you know, as you know, I think you had the article out one day after the 2021 draft ends. 2022 draft cycle, really, it's already begun by the time the 2020 draft is taking place. But it's in full swing already one day after that draft ends.
Yep.
A couple of the guys at this tournament, Logan Cooley and Brad Lambert, we think both of those have top 10 potential in this coming draft. You put the article. I'll just kind of turn the floor over to you here. What's the shape of the 2022 draft right now?
Right, and not just those two. We have Canada's U18 camps already going on. As we speak, the Czech team had a U20 camp not too long ago. David Juracek, top prospect, was a part of that camp. And, of course, the Klinka Gretzky starts in a couple of days after this podcast will publish, which will feature many of the top prospects for the 2022 and 23 drafts. At that tournament. So, yes, we're turning the page rather quickly. No surprise that the number one prospect for next year's draft is Shane Wright. Anybody who watched the U18 Worlds or paid vague attention to junior hockey will have known this name as a guy who, if your team needs a foundational number one center, he's no guarantee to become that, but he's got a pretty good shot. And that's a player that a lot of teams would do a lot of stupid things for. So even though you only have a 25% chance, is it 20 or 5 or 20% chance? I think it's one of those two. I think there might be some misaligned incentives going into this year's draft, depending on how the regular season goes, to give yourself the best chance to get that kind of prospect. And then after that, I would say it gets a little bit more wide open. I don't think there is a defined next group of players after Wright. I'm sure some will argue for Brad Lambert, like you just mentioned, or Matthew Savoy, who played in Dubuque and will play in the WHL this season. But I'm not convinced that they've separated themselves. Maybe 3 years or two, 3 years ago they were, but time has passed and the situation has changed. And I would say most scouts I talk to right now around the league have Ivan Miroshchenko as the second best prospect in this draft, who was absolutely outstanding at the U18 World Championships for Russia. They would also mention Danila Yurov right at the top of the draft, another Russian who played the U18 Worlds late birthday to play in Magnitogorsk next season. I really like Juracek, I just mentioned. I really like both of the two top Slovaks who played the World Championships the season before they were draft eligible. That was just a wild thing to see. Unique World Championships, mind you, not always the best players
and
there.
That's Simon Nemec and Juris Slakovsky.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, they played there as, you know, a 16-year-old. That's, you know, a really unique thing to happen for, you know, even a semi-major nation. And then you have Logan Cooley, who you just mentioned, who I think will definitely be in the mix of it. And there's some others there too, but Cooley, between him and Lambert, Cooley's, I thought, been the most impressive of the two here at the World Junior Summer Showcase. He's a really well-rounded forward, I think. 5'10", but I think he's got everything else. He's a great skater. He's really a skilled playmaker. He's highly competitive. I think he's got a real shot to make the final World Junior team. Will he? Will he not? We'll see how his season go and other people's seasons go. But given that he's such a well-rounded two-way guy, I definitely see a spot there in the bottom part of the lineup that he could crack, and Brad Lambert will be on Finland's team. Just he was on it last year, although no guarantees. Atu Ratu was on
That's right.
their team 2 years ago and didn't make it this past season, so he's got to earn it. But he realistically, I would say, while last year's World Junior really lacked a draft element,
yeah,
I would bet this year's one will. I would imagine Wright, Lambert, Miroshchenko, Yurov, Juracek, Slafkovsky, Nemec. I imagine they'll all be at the World Juniors this year.
Reputationally, 2022 draft has gotten a lot of fanfare. And years ahead, I mean, we know how this goes. the best player in the draft 2 years from now is always the best player, right? This class, like you mentioned, there has kind of been reputationally a triumvirate of Wright, Lambert, Savoy. So it sounds like that's shifted a little bit. Reputationally, how does the 2022 draft as a whole compare to 2021 coming in here? Like, for example, like we talk about Logan Cooley. Matthew Beniers made the U.S. World Junior team last year. How does Logan Cooley at this time compare to Matthew Beniers a year ago?
Probably a little bit below him, but not dramatically below him. I think when I talk to scouts around the league, there's a little bit more excitement for the top of this year's draft, with the major caveat that a lot changes in the period of a year. A lot could change from now to next June, provided we actually now have a somewhat normal full season in all the major leagues. A lot of new information can come in. We don't even know who the best Ontario players are other than Shane Wright. That's a mystery that needs to be solved, to be quite honest. So that's going to be something we're going to need to see play out over the next over the next season. I sent my list around to a bunch of scouts. I didn't get much pushback for having Miro Shevchenko at 2. I didn't get much pushback for having Lambert at 4 or Savoy at 7. I think Savoy was really good in the USHL this season for Dubuque. I didn't get a sense from a lot of people who went to go watch him. They came away just raving that this guy is, the next like Patrick Kane or something like that. I think he's considered like a really good player. Probably closer to like a Cole Perfetti, Lucas Raymond, like high skill IQ type player who was undersized, not an amazing skater for that size. So that's a great prospect to have. I never got the sense that like there's like these three like future no doubt all stars. I think there's one, and then there's I would call this a rather large pool of really really good players, a larger pool than the one we just had.
Yeah,
go a year ahead. But we'll see how the next year plays out, obviously. But and a lot of them are listed as centers, like Lambert and Savoy are listed as centers.
Lambert's been on the wing at the showcase here.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing. Will he be centers or not? The one guy that we didn't mention would be Connor Geeky. I really like Connor Geeky. He was really good when I watched him in the WHL this season. So he's a guy I think that could be a center in the NHL. I think Cooley could be a center in the NHL. And the rest, we'll see. But this definitely looks like a much more forward-heavy class a year in advance anyways.
No matter what kind of work you do, how you communicate is key. Grammarly is your AI writing partner to help you communicate more effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact at work. Whether you're sending emails or writing a Slack message, the last thing you want is a grammatical error. It just looks unprofessional. Just a little bit of help from Grammarly can make a big impact on your work day to day. 96% of Grammarly users report that Grammarly helps them craft more impactful writing. It works across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, tone suggestions help you navigate even the most difficult work conversations. Save time with one click and go from editing drafts in hours to seconds. 93% of professionals using Grammarly Premium report that it helps them get more work done. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
All right, now let's get into the mailbag. And obviously we do have some team-specific questions that we'll get into more here. Everyone wants to know about their new top prospect. This one, I think, though, is kind of broadly applicable because it Thomas J.S., I know goalies take time to develop, but with a highly touted prospect like Wallstedt, what's your prediction on his timeline to the NHL? I think we could lump Kosa right into the same kind of conversation. Are they different?
No, I would say they're probably, given how similar I would say they are in terms of talent, I would say you're looking at 2 to 3 years. I would say you look at Spencer Knight, for example. He played in the NHL this season. That was, I thought, the best case scenario was it took 2 years, and it looks like he'll get an opportunity there to play next season. So you're talking about basically 3 years,
year
three since the draft. Vasilevsky played 2 extra years in the KHL, then he played a year in the American League, and then he was up. John Gibson played 2 extra junior seasons, then an American League season, and then he was up. So those would be the most recent premium goalie prospects. Maybe you can go after Robert Lehner's year. It was kind of the same thing, I believe, that we can think of premium goalie prospects taking about 3 years. And now Kosa and Wallstedt are both late birth dates. Maybe then in the best case scenario, you're looking at 2 extra years. Kosa doing 1 year of more year junior than 1 year in the American League. Wallstedt doing another year, whether it's in Sweden or possibly in Canada, and then maybe an extra year in the American League before he was ready. But I think that'd be realistic.
Nam Danan wants your thoughts on the month Bill Armstrong and the Arizona Coyotes had. He says it feels like the Coyotes' accumulation of futures assets in such a short period of time is unprecedented. If it fails, what will be the reason? If it succeeds, what will be the reason? We can just kind of talk broadly about the Coyotes' weekend, though, because I think right now, as things stand, we just talked about the 2022 draft. I believe they have 2 firsts and 5 seconds right now going into that draft, and we're still a year away from it.
Yeah, I think what that tells me is the new management group came in, they assessed their roster, they assessed their farm system, and they concluded we can't probably be a contender out of this group. And they probably got the blessing from their ownership that, you know, we need to bring in more future assets. It doesn't mean that Clayton Keller and Jacob Chychrun and Barrett Hayton and Victor Soderstrom and some of the other pieces there are not really good players. I know Hayton didn't have the best season, but I personally believe he'll be better next season. I still think he's going to be a good NHL player in time. I think Keller and Chychrun are really good players. But it's fair to say they came in and concluded we need more. And with this, we need a better foundation here to build around. And that's going to take time, as anybody who's been part of a rebuilding organization knows, and Coyotes fans are in the same spot. It's going to take time, but that seems to be the direction they're heading in right now.
When you look at a team that has this many picks, I mean, what's the smartest way for Arizona to go about this? Should they try and package these to get kind of like what Columbus ended up with a couple of picks or three picks in the first round and hope you get the right things to fall? Should they take 5 dart throws in the second?
I mean, it's hard to speculate. I tend to think markets are rather efficient. Yeah. And obviously the thing we always think about when it comes to rebuilding teams is you need the star. You need the star number one center, the number one defenseman. Like, you need the really hard pieces to get. But it's not easy to get them. You know, that's Shane Wright, and Shane Wright will be gone the first pick into next year's
draft. Which they could get, by the way.
They could, unlikely, but they could. But, you know, at that point, the draft becomes just calculated bets, and whether you'll have a better chance at 10 than you will at 30, but you will have maybe the same odds if you have shots at 25, 30, and 50.
Yeah.
As you would if you just had 1 of 10. So the math, I think, tends to be rather efficient. You just accumulate the assets and you do your best to try and get the best players. And frankly, the draft's a lot of praying, to be quite honest. You know, we all do a lot of work on these kids. And we try to really understand them and try our best to project them. But at the end of the day, you can draft a guy who looks terrible and all of a sudden he looks great 2 years later or vice versa. But that seems to be the direction they're heading, is just trying to get as many future assets as possible to build a better foundation there.
From a team that is just getting into the thick of a rebuild to a team that may be starting to kind of crawl out of it, Craig wants to know, do the Devils have enough talent amassed to be Stanley Cup contenders within the first 4 years of Dougie Hamilton's brand new contract that he just signed at the start of free agency? He says, assuming trades or free agent signings for some top six forwards, which feels like a pretty big caveat here.
Yeah, because, I mean, just realistically looking at this team without any external additions, with Dougie, Jack Hughes, Nico Hischier, Alex Holtz, Dawson Mercer, Shaquille McCombe-Dulin, and I think I did, not sure if I mentioned Ty Smith or not. You have Nolan Foote there too. It's a good foundation. I would be pressed to say that looks like a Stanley Cup contender, at least until we see the next steps from Luke or Nico. Maybe he sure never becomes a true high echelon player. I still think he has a lot of talent. I wouldn't bet against him to becoming a really, really good player, at least production-wise. I believe a lot in Jack Hughes. I think he is going to be a star caliber player. But until he does that, and that's only one star, now you have two, arguably with Dougie, it's hard to see contender. Can this become a better team, a playoff team, maybe even a good team? You're starting to see the pieces. I would probably stop short of calling this core group, even with external additions of, let's say, a second line forward, a second pair defenseman here or there, a Stanley Cup contending group just quite yet.
Let's dig in on a couple of the pieces that are on the wings right now just to feel for what they have come. Because what I like about New Jersey is that they have used their high picks to get the really hard pieces. They've got two top six centers. Even people who are a little lower on Heischer, I think, would agree he can be a pretty good second line center. They've now used a top five pick on Luke Hughes. They have Ty Smith, who they've developed. They've brought in Dougie Hamilton. They've traded for Ryan Graves. I like the center and D look of their makeup for the next few years.
Can Blackwood be the guy, though?
That's a good question. It's a fair question. I don't know the answer. Yeah, he's still young.
I like him. I'm not like, if you told me he became a top 10 goalie in the league, I'd be surprised. Right. Yeah, like I do think he can be a helpful NHL goalie, but that's one where I think there's still a bit of a question. Not that he's not a good player, but that's a question for me. Holtz didn't have the best season,
but we still like him as a top six wing.
He's a really good player. I really like Dawson Mercer too.
Top six caliber.
I think he can be. And because they have Jack and Nico there, the question with Mercer is going to be: is he going to be your third line center?
Yeah. Which
would be a great third line center, I think. Or do you push him onto the wing to give him more opportunities to score? Like I said, I think there is a foundation here to be a good team. To be a playoff team, I think there are better days ahead for New Jersey. Contenders are really high bar. Like you go watch the Stanley Cup Finals this year. You go through Tampa's roster. You can kind of like check off the boxes of what you think you might have in the absolute best case scenario. And they had a lot of pieces. Now I think Tampa's roster was constructed in a world where absolutely everything went right for them almost. Like, you know, they get the most valuable player in each draft, like 3 or 4 years running. They get a bunch of undrafted guys who become really good players. A lot of things went really right for them. And not every Stanley Cup contender looks like that.
Yeah.
But I still think there's a little bit more still for New Jersey to bring in before they're at that level.
Real quick on New Jersey, Igor Sharangovich, Jesper Bratt, Pavel Zacha. How many true top six forwards on a contender do you see out of those three?
Probably. Maybe Brett, maybe.
But maybe zero.
Maybe zero. Like Zacha had a better year this year, which was inspiring, I thought. I like Sharon.
He's their leading scorer.
Yeah. You know, I haven't probably dug into him as much, but he's a good player. I can buy Brett. I can buy Zacha. I like Sharangovich. He's not but in that caliber, he's like, I would want him. If you're a contender, he's a bottom six guy for you, I imagine.
So if you're New Jersey, you want to still go get that top end goalie.
And I was probably harsh on Zacha. Like, you could, after the season he had, he probably should have been discussed right there with Brod, if not ahead of him. But yeah.
So, you're still looking for that top end goalie. You probably want a first line caliber winger. If you're going to go out and you're going to say, I'm bringing in a now first line winger, that could be a really big piece that they need to add still.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, just there isn't yet the guys you have on this team who you're like, these guys I know are upper echelon NHL players. Yep. There's a lot of hope still, but we don't have a lot of certainty yet.
Peter Kay, this is a good one. I think this is, because to me in baseball, you always talk about what's a number one pitcher, what's an ace, blah, blah, blah. Peter wants to know, what's your definition of a number one center? Seems like every year half the league is looking for a true number one, when really everyone has someone playing on their first line.
Right, and I think you have these debates with hockey people of you have certain types of centers who you'll say, I think he could be a top 30 center in the league. He may not be the number one center on a contender. You know, we had this discussion, say, with Matthew Beniers. I don't think there were a lot of NHL teams telling me, I think Beniers is going to be a top 10 center in the National Hockey League. You would often hear, oh, he's number two on a contender. But you also hear people say, like, but you could also say in the same vein then that Matthew Beniers is a first line center. But I think when you hear about number one centers, you're talking about guys who pretty much have it all. You're talking about players who have just their attributes just rise to such a level that they are among the best forwards in the league. You're talking about guys who are, like, look like Kirby Dach. They're 6'3", 6'4", can skate, have great skill, or even if they don't have the big skating size variables. They have unreal skill in playmaking, like a Nicklas Backstrom, for example. Those are the guys you're talking about, like real guys who's just their attributes just rise to such a level that it's clear they're a driving force in the NHL. And I realized kind of what you said, you know, there are theoretically 32 number one centers, just like in baseball, there are theoretically 32 number one pitchers. But you don't always need to have, you know, a true number one center to be a contender. I think Vegas is a fantastic team, and I don't think William Karlsson, I would call him a true number one center, or
Chandler Stephenson, same deal.
Yeah. Yep. Or, you know, whoever we would call the first line center on their team.
Montreal, is Nick Suzuki a true number one?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think he could be kind of what I just said there. I think he could top out as like a lower half of the league, league. Well, maybe not playing the same way as Beniers, but
that,
like
that similar level.
Like the 25th to 40th, like best center in the league or something like that. Like that's kind of what you think you're hoping for out of him. But yeah, no, I think like, no guarantee. It's not a prerequisite, but it's a highly correlated over the years that you that true top 10, 15 center in the league tends to correlate rather strongly with success.
Yeah. All right. Scott S. wants to pull us right back into the 2022 conversation. I love that. He wants to know, so in a year that he wants to know, who you think will be the top draft year plus one prospect in the 2022 draft? He also says, and how will the Chicago Steel get him? But I think it's a really good question because the answer might be a lot of guys. There might be a ton of guys who pop.
Yeah, I think any scout you would ask that question to, the answer it's going to be is, I don't know who it is, but it's going to be somebody in Ontario.
Yeah.
Like, there's just going to be some guy that none of us have ever heard of before that's going to step into the OHL next season and have like a point and a half per game and be a leading player in that league. And I could not even begin to discuss who that could be right now. Well, yeah, we have some guesses. Maybe some of the guys who went undrafted from the Erie Showcase. Maybe it's like Tucker Robertson or something like that, or somebody along those lines who has a lot of skill but didn't actually get drafted. But it's really hard to say. I think the OHL is going to be really fascinating to watch next season.
How high can a kind of re-entry prospect reasonably expect to get in this draft? Like, I want to say Chinnikov was a re-entry prospect.
Yes.
He goes 21.
Uh-huh.
What would be like the, like, let's say a guy goes out and has like a Jack Quinn kind of year, but he's 1 year older. What's the highest he could reasonably expect to go?
Oh, wow. Like, that would be... That'd be so fun. Like, I mean, that would to have like that kind of discussion, like, cause there could be more than one of them.
Yeah.
There could be like, you could be looking at a scenario where you got like two or three of those guys that we don't really, that where it's Jack Quinn or it's a guy like has a Tyson Forrester year, yeah. Or never mind if there's another country like the United States or something like that, or in Europe, keep in mind, you know, most of Sweden's junior league didn't get to play this season.
Right.
You know, that's a variable in there. That could be a variable that we're looking at going next year's draft, but it's unpredictable. So it's hard for me to say, you know, how high that can be or the caliber of the players. I don't even know who these players are yet.
Right. All right. Last one is from Jared Brown. I think it's an interesting one. He kind of wants to know, you know, teams have their own list.
And sure.
So we see the NHL Central Scouting list come out. How do teams use the Central Scouting list? Do they use the Central Scouting list?
Central Scouting has a lot of different utilities for teams. I think the actual lists, you know, so they'll send them lists that don't always get published early in the year. Like, for example, they would have been sent by now at a list for 2022 saying, like, here are some of the top guys. It provides them with, you know, just a list of names that they would already have had. Their guys' work is to do underage work as well, to flag underagers that are interesting. But it's an extra set of eyes on that to help get their year started. Their early season list, their mid-season list tend to be looked at by teams and tend to stir discussions and debates a little bit on, are we too high or are we too low on guys? Typically by the end of the season, I would say the utility for teams has run out. By then, teams have typically have their lists pretty set and they're not really relying on Central Scouting for guidance on players by then. That's probably more for the public at that stage. The midseason and particularly the end of season list is more of a media thing, a public information vehicle. The Central Scouting also has other utilities throughout the season. They're often sending schedule changes, injury updates to teams. Anything that they would need to know in regards to major events, they're usually flagging for them. They also are in charge of getting official heights and weights. They're in charge of running the NHL Combine. So there's a bunch of utilities for NHL Central Scouting, aside from the actual list-making process, which is still important for them.
That's going to do it for us. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Athletic Hockey Show Prospect Series. Please also follow the Athletic Hockey Show on your favorite podcast platform and leave a rating and a review if you're enjoying it. That really helps us out. Annual subscriptions to The Athletic are just $3.99 a month when you visit theathletic.com/hockeyshow. Go do that right now. There's not going to be a better time. We'll talk to you soon.